Hello, Christian. Michael, you should listen in and do my stuff. I'm like, yeah, that sound good. You can do the quizzes and embarrass the students. Christian's online, I guess.
Quiz right now.
I don't know. He asked me a question. Did you get your quiz done, Christian? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got it done. Yeah,
Can you hear me all right? All right.
I got it done.
Was it 3 minutes too short?
No,
Okay.
but it took me a few tries.
Well, that's the idea. I think
But
I have a.
one or two questions in there that stumped me. I just couldn't figure it out. I was like, what? I mean,
Yeah. Well, I think I'll make it like that, and then after the assignment's due, I'll just open it up, and then you can look at the stuff. But I put the due dates for next Tuesday, so.
now, do you get an email when we complete it, or do
No,
we should we take a picture?
I didn't set that up. I could, but I have there's a report that I can see. So that's why keep track of your scores and when you did it for all these, and then you can turn that in, but you can't just make things up because I can go look at the report. Come on in. Watch my cable. See how this is gonna work today. And stuff. I don't know. I haven't figured out how to do on my monitors. Okay, I gotta let people in and stuff. So some people gotta watch this here. Can send feedback. Okay. See how this works off with these desks and everything. I don't know what I'm gonna do when Christian comes back. Maybe we'll just make him sit in his office and I was thinking maybe I'll put another table in the back, or maybe we'll, I don't know what we'll do, but you could probably see the stuff online easier. I mean, in person easier than online, so. Okay, maybe I scared everybody away on Tuesday.
That's how it is.
Okay. Okay, that means more came. Okay. What's the question? The sampling frequency for the instruments are typically 1 hertz, 25 hertz, or 10 hertz. Them are the three popular frequencies historically. So we sampled an ADD board at 25 hertz, so anything with that. But the WCM is doing any stuff internally, so it reports every 1 hertz because it's digital data. A lot of the digital data is 1 hertz. The King probe, which is old analog data, is 25 hertz. And we are sampling the crowd dropper probe at 10 hertz. And I changed it, maybe we'll start a little bit, but I changed the data acquisition to include a particle-by-particle data for the CDP. So we'll see if them files show up. So this would be for the upcoming. Yeah, not the last one. So we did 10 hertz data without particle by particle files. And I don't see any reason not to record by particle by particle data. We just have to make sure it works with the network, with the cabling on the aircraft. But it should, because we're communicating with it at 230,000 baud rate. So, yes, goes into a serial input port. So we're just jumping in here for everybody that's listening, talking about the data and stuff, but we'll have a special lecture on data acquisition at some point. You can, and that's one reason we only do 10 hertz on the crowd dropper probe, is because we can't get the data across any faster. So we would have to go to double the baud rate to 4,600 bits per second to get to 25 hertz data. And I would love to have Jen or someone get that working, because supposedly the M300 can do that and the CDP, but it never worked for me. So, okay, welcome. We got a few new people online, but I don't think I'll go through introductions. I think I'll just get started. We are talking just about different things, and we related to the Impacts project. So everybody can hear me, give me a thumbs up, and that. I got a couple thumbs up. Good. We'll mute Christian. I got it recording, and I thought that we would start the process every day with a overview of what's changed, because we're getting these racks ready for the Impacts project. So give me a chance to get everybody up to speed on what we're doing. And we can look at the racks and do everything that's in here. And I have to turn my video camera a little bit and see if we can point at the racks. So, hey, there we go. Now everybody can see the racks. Move the chair out of the way. One thing we did was we reinstalled the rack here for 2DS. And we gotta see if we can still get this not to come up with the power on and have to go shut it off all the time. We tried to take it apart to see if we could get it so that the computer wouldn't power up automatically when power supply to the rack. Then we added a nice new keyboard tray here. You can see that. So we got that to pull out for our external keyboard. I'm talking to SCC. Rick has promised me another keyboard that we can try for a wireless one. We've been trying wireless keyboards for these that will work, but we struck out twice. And we're going to try to get that. But we got this nice rack, and it's better than the old one we had. And it really goes in there quite a ways so we can get to the HTTPS computers. So that worked out well. We got that installed. We also had to order some more clips for these because now we ran out of clips to hold our racks together. We also got a new display. However, unfortunately, it's not what I intended to get because unlike the other one, it doesn't have a KVM switch in here. So I asked Christian to see if we can get the one with the KVM. And I was thinking we could move this one up here and replace this monitor. And it would work better because then you could fold it up and push it in and it would be secure. We wouldn't have to remove it for shipping. So Christian, try to see if you can figure out which one to get.
Yeah, I'm going to see. I think maybe they messed up our order because when I look back, I swear I chose the KVM option. So,
Yeah, see about that because I thought the number was the one that was without it. So you can look at it, but I seem to have the number and you can get the invoice from Wanda. But they kind of we did it weird on the site because they have just a monitor keyboard and they got the KVMs and they might be different locations or something. So it's sometimes very difficult to get exactly what you want.
Are you going to return that one or?
I was thinking that we would save this one and what we would do is take it, if we get the other one, take it and put it up here and use it instead of this monitor because then you can this one you would have to take off if we're going to ship it, if we're going to ship the racks. And also it might NASA and the safety folks might make it better that you have it lower all within the rack. So I think we have a use for it.
Okay,
does that make sense, Christian?
Yeah.
It's a perfectly good monitor and keyboard. Of course, you know, the keyboard and stuff is up there. So, you know, if you were going to, but you don't have to hook that into a, you don't have to connect the keyboard. You can connect the keyboard to the KVM or a different one, you know?
Gotcha. So still look for the something similar to that, but just with the KVM option.
Yeah. So the KVM option, see there's one here that on this panel.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can see it. This one just doesn't have that and doesn't have it in the back. So
gotcha.
You know, it's basically the same thing minus the KVM. So they must have a model number or something that you add the KVM option to it. So it's the same thing we want, except that. So okay. So that's the updates to the racks for today. Any questions about that?
Yeah, I might have missed this. What's KVM?
Oh, it's sorry, there's a lot of acronyms we use, so ask questions. K stands for keyboard, V stands for video, and M stands for mouse. So what they let us do is switch between different computers. So we have we would have three displays on here, but we have six computers. Okay, so how do you bring up them six computers or data acquisition systems with only three keyboards, mice, and video displays, which we're increasing from two last year. So that way we have an extra display to display more probe data and be able to compare that. So good. Keep asking questions when I use these acronyms that you don't understand. Okay, other questions. Speak up.
Put it in. When are these leaving to head to Wallops?
Good question, but we need to get them there before October 3rd. So we don't have about 3 weeks. Yeah, so I'm going to try to see if we can stretch it out a little bit, but we only have about 3 weeks. And then these have to be gone. And related to impacts is we're talking about our crowd droplet probe, and I'm working on getting NASA Langley has one that we're going to borrow, so we'll have it there. And so I'm working on getting it, the maintenance and calibration and all checked out by DMT and have it shipped to Wallops. So we'll have two of these probes, one for hot standbys. And so it'd be good that we get a lot of people trained up doing the calibrations, because then we have to calibrate and check out the other probe too. So there's no point of having a probe if we don't know if it works. So we need to see about getting that also checked out, and the wiring and everything works. And then we're going to switch them back and forth. Okay, now I need to share my screen. Other questions? Share. Okay, now you see that screen up there. And I want to put on the website. So I put on here the lecture notes and the recordings and audio from previously on there, so you can look at that. There's the ADPA quiz, so you can look at that and do that. For people wanting a grade, you should do that by the Tuesday. I heard some people who have done it. You can do it up to 5 times and get it done. Look at that, and then I'll probably open that up. The other thing I did now is I added a quiz for the crowd droplet probe, so you can do that by next Thursday. So don't get behind, because things will just keep coming as fast as I can make them, and you can attempt it 5 times. So and then everybody can do that, even if you're not taking it for a class. So we'll do that. And my monitor keeps flipping out. Yes. Do you know anything about it? I gotta get my monitor better. But yeah, I don't know if it's a cable or the connection. Cable? It's one of them. I'll fix it sometime maybe by the end of the semester. I wanted to, on my topic is we want to take some data today so we can start looking at the accuracy of the sizing. However, I wanted to respond to the question last time, which was about how we detect the depth of field, know what the depth of field was. So I revised the lecture slightly and added some more slides. So I didn't write this lecture just for today. I've been working on this for 20 years. So that's the hint of how to get these done. But we were talking about this depth of field. So right here, how do you define this depth of field along the laser beam? And ideally, you just like to block something here. And it has to do with this qualifier incisor back here with this beam split. So let me see if I can clarify this. So I have a new slide called depth of field. So only particles that pass through the uniform power region. So we talked about that the laser has pretty uniform compared to the FSSP of the laser beam can be sized accurately. So you only want them within this uniform beam. And that also kind of by definition, this region is called a depth of field because it's not uniform scattering if you get them out of focus. So the CDP qualifies the particles that fall within this depth of field, and the instrument only sizes these particles. So that's kind of what we left off with last time. So how does it do this? How does it determine what this depth of field is? So I got a qualified particle slide, and we took this image from Sarah Svans' 2010 paper, and it's a shows the laser optical path. And one of the things you have to notice here, it's a kind of a complicated diagram in the sense that you have the laser, you have these 90 degree mirrors, you got the windows, and then you get it into the open end. So here you have a particle, a droplet that is qualified. Then you have another one here, this blue one, that is out of the depth of field. Okay, so qualified depth of field and then out of the depth of field. And they term this qualified. So that's what they do here. And you have these, it's kind of subtle, but you have two beams, the red here and the blue. If you see down here, you have red and blue from these two particles. So they wouldn't be simultaneous in here, but imagine that that's the difference. Okay, so if the particle is in the depth of field, it gives you the red optical path. And if it's out of the depth of field, it gives you the blue. So that's what's given with the first two bullet points here. So droplets within the depth of field have a qualified pulse that is two times larger than the sizer one. So you have a qualifier and a sizer that we talked about before with a beam splitter. The beam splitter splits that optics on 50-50. Okay, the difference is this qualified mask or qualifier mask. Okay, and it's hard to see, but if you focus in on it, and I give you a zoomed up image here, it actually blocks. It's just a block. It's a pinhole. Yep. That blocks some of the light. And is set to such a size that the ones that are out of the depth of field or out of the qualified depth of field get blocked. Okay. And so they take this qualified laser, right, times it by two, and compare it to the sizer, okay, in the pulse that's generated, okay? So that is how you determine it, because you basically block the light, you reduce the intensity in the optics with this mask when they're out of the depth of field. So it's not that you don't get any light, but you don't get enough that it becomes qualified. So it's complicated. But does that help? Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you so much for including this side.
Yeah. So it's and my understanding is that mask is you really got to look at that these beams. And of course they did this well in a paper, but it's difficult to really understand it without looking at what they mean by these out of depth of field. Go ahead.
I noticed a difference actually in FSSP instrument. It's slightly different than the CDP. So here in CDP, you are actually taking only the signal which is coming from the depth of field. But in FSSP, it's a little bit different. It's actually there is a dumb spot at one of the sensor. So they actually block the signal that is coming from the depth of field and record the signal which is coming out of the depth of field and then subtract a little bit. So there is a little bit difference in the
there is a dumb spot here.
Not yeah, it's here. This is CDP, but in FSSP there is a dumb spot, another dumb spot in the one of the qualifiers.
Oh, they
put that I have noticed.
The dump spot in the qualifier.
Yeah. Like if you have put that figure in this presentation in the beginning, I guess.
Yeah. But there's another thing that's actually missing from this one, which is the coincidence depth of field, because there's another block in here that's not included as far as I can see, which is that particles way outside the depth of field are blocked.
Hmm.
That's what Sarah Rand's work to is to add that additional mask.
Hmm.
You know, because you could then, so this kind of defines the exact depth of field, but you still don't want particles that are really close to here being considered because you can start to have coincidence from the particles outside the depth of field with the ones inside the depth of field. So that's what they added later on.
Mm-hmm.
Is this additional mask. I'll have to think about it. I mean, I could show you. I think I have the optics from the FSSP.
Yeah, please. Can you please go to that slide?
So you want to go to the other one, huh?
Yeah, right here. So you can see the dump spot in the photodetector module on the lower upper left.
Yeah, they put it in the down where the qualifier is, but it's
yeah. So it works a little bit different, and you have mentioned this in the one of the sentences below that one photodetector is optically masked not to receive the scatter light from the laser beam center of focus, which is kind of opposite to what is happening in CDP, right?
I'm thinking of how that would work though if you don't block the light from the direct forward scattering.
And there is actually an explanation in this paper, Diane Baumgartner. I looked into it, and there is one diagram in that paper which explains this thing, like how this thing works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of details in the mechanics of this, but, you know.
Yeah, but it is very interesting, like,
yeah.
Difference in the generation of sensors and a little bit different technology every time.
Yeah, and then they, I didn't cover all the stuff too. There's actually another difference in the sense that they stabilize the lasers and the detectors more for temperature and CDPs. So there's lots of different improvements that they make for this. So we talked about the me scattering. So I need to, I guess, stop. So this is the point here. And then we want to talk about how you size the particles. Because, again, you have these, it's a Mie scattering probe, it's Ford scattering. And you detect the particles by the intensity of the light, which is not linear, as we talked about. And then you have these pulse amplitudes. And I was trying to see. Oh, I didn't. I don't think I added another figure. I don't think I uploaded it to the website. Maybe next time we could talk about the pulse amplitudes. But it's the every time that light goes through the laser beam, as it just comes in there, it starts to scatter a little bit of light, and then it gets more and more and more until it gets the maximum, and then it decays. And there's a Gaussian for that. And the other thing is, if I had time, I could put the oscilloscope on, and you can see all the pulses on the oscilloscope. So that's what the electrical engineers do. So maybe on next week we could talk a little bit about the pulses for that. So each one of these pulses then gets a digital threshold value for the amplitude of it, and then that gets stuck into a size. So I'll upload my latest version and talk a little bit more about the pulse and the threshold of the beam. And the other thing is, and it gets sized into channels from starting at 2 microns up to 50. So one of the things we should talk about in the class is limitations of the probe and why that is. So my question is, why does the CDP have a lower limit? What's the reason we can't go down to very, 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 very small size particles? Generals.
It has to do with the angle. So you see 4 degrees and 12 degrees. And these particles smaller than 2 microns.
Well, they scatter in all directions. It changes with size. But all the particles will scatter 2 to 4 at some rate. More or less.
What you're saying is it's just not enough.
Yes, that's the idea. You just don't get enough of an intensity of light from the small particles, because the particles, the intensity here goes up on this one as the size of the particles go up. So if you go down to smaller and smaller sizes, that intensity gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and eventually it gets below the noise level of the electronics. So that is the reason on the smaller size. And maybe I'll let you ponder for next Tuesday what the upper size limit is and why we have an upper size limit. Because we should be great there. We get more and more scattered light, easier to detect. So why don't we go above 50? So ponder that and maybe look at my latest version and you can find the answer there. So what I want to do today, so any questions besides why we can't go above 50? I won't wait till Tuesday to answer that.
I just want to put a comment. The lower size limit is also maybe constrained because of the Mie theory. When you go to the lower particle size, the size is then comparable to the wavelength of the laser, and the Mie theory doesn't work there. No, it becomes smaller than the wavelength of the laser. So,
yeah, but the theory works. It's just that you get more, the humps get broad, wider, and you get more of the broaderness of it. So, you know, you would have more uncertainty in the size, and but it wouldn't eliminate that the possibility of Dune in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of subtlety there, but yeah, your meat bumps do get broader, and you get more ambiguity in the size of the particles.
That's deceptive because you're using a log scale.
Yeah. Log scales are terrible, right? Should never put things on log scales. But yeah, the pulse amplitudes go down. So
the width of the pulses looks like it's getting smaller, but the scales.
Yeah, your scale is logarithmic. Oh yeah, I guess that's on that scale too. So, but you know, they are smaller at the, they are wider at the 3 to 4 than it is at 30 to 40. But so, well.
3 to 4 is
like 1 month. Yeah. 30 to 40 is maybe 10 months between 30 and 40. Change that much. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Yeah.
Hey, we lost you for a little bit. Your internet cut out.
Oh, okay. Sorry, we're just discussing the width of the bins of the meat scattering. And also, I guess we should talk loud when we're in the room here. So.
It's like a diffraction pattern. When you make a diffraction pattern by putting a light through a pinhole, and then reverse and you've got a droplet. The fringes are uniform in space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I guess I see that. So wouldn't really make a difference because, I mean, I know what they do with the PCAS probe, which senses aerosols. They go down to lower sizes, and it uses the same light scattering principle. The only problem there is they got to amplify the signal. So, you know, so here there's no amplification that's special. There they have two amplification stages.
Yeah, so. Plus they put the particles right through the laser cavity. Optics.
Yeah. So you get more scattered light, but at fundamentally at some size, you're not going to get enough scattered light from a single particle. Okay. Let's see here. I'm going to go back. So anyway, what I want to do today is actually see if we can take a little bit of data, show you how to take the data so that we can come up with different sizes and perform one of these performance checks for the sizing and get a bump like this where we put particles through and give you the data and then write up something if you want to go through and come up with how well the instrument is working. So with that, I think I will stop sharing my screen and go back to the video, which means I gotta go over here and gotta hit escape somehow. And I get my video back. Go over to the, in which window? I'm hitting escape. Nothing's happening on my. Am I locked up again? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Okay. And I'm still sharing a screen, right?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. So, all right. Now you can see my video, right? Okay. We will move to the labs portion of this exercise. See how this will work. So, yell. And I'm trying to see if you can't see enough, I don't know if I want to move it in or spread it out. I try to move this around as much as I can. Anyway, and what you guys should do, and maybe we'll take some more data, is we should have a notebook, take a data, write down what we're doing in. So the first thing we have is we have the data system here, record the data. We got the cloud dropper probe over here, and I better move my camera a little bit. If I could put this, oh, there, I can put it over here a little bit better. Okay. Yeah, we can do this. So, data system, the probe's there. I got power on the probe. I can see the laser back here. I checked that. And I'm just going to start and do something to show you it works before I break it and show you all the details. I have the data system started here. We have to start the data system to record the data. The other thing that it does is it gives you a data file. So that's always important to record. So this one is 2022. It's the date 08/25 and then 18/38/39 and it's .sca for science engineer associates. So it's a date with underscores in it. Automatically records the data. And then I have the screens up here, which hopefully you might be able to see. But the data screens here that shows us the data. So you guys can see this maybe. Not sure how we want to all do this. But maybe I can ask Jen to help me. So you want to run the data system, Jen? Yes. Okay. We'll do that. And what we need to do is this one is the size channel. So these are 30 channels. This is concentration, right? So it's basically the number of particles that I give it. So we can do that. And I have some of these old calibration beads I start with. So these are beads, and I'm doing it 15 micron or 15.9. And you trace out the particles. So I put some of these in here, and I have it hooked up to a compressed air supply. And I'm just going to do it first of all to see that we get some data. So let's see if I can do this.
So just for everybody to know, the dump spot monitor on the CDP's main text, it'll tell you a value. You want it to be 2.5 volts and above, typically. Yeah. So it'll just, I usually try to get it for 3 volts, but that's just by cleaning it. So the cleaner it is, the higher those voltages are on the dump spot monitor. It will go down now as we're flying because obviously liquid water and ice accumulate on the dump.
But it's so there's two things. The dump spot is the intensity of the laser,
yeah.
Right? So that's just what's recorded. But it's also relative. So when they size this, it's a relative size. So as long as you don't have the intensity go down below what the instrument will detect. But there's a lot of diagnostics information on here. So that's why you have to understand the theory so that when you see some of the diagnostic information, you can understand what it means. So dump spot, and some of the names are sometimes ambiguous, but and it's really not, besides cleaning it, seeing how well it does that, So do you record then the dump spot voltage after you clean it?
Yes. So typically before we take off, I also write that down in my flight notes just so that I know that it is getting voltage. That's important for if you have issues during flight and CDP doesn't work at some point, you have a reference of what was working at this time and it had this voltage.
Yeah. So we record all the data too, but you want to make sure you want to do the check that the instruments are working. And so we have a checklist to go through at the beginning of the flights, just like the pilots do. We'll talk about that later. So anyway, I want to see if we get some beads here. I'm just going to turn on my air supply and see if I can pass some through. There was a little bit there. And let's see if I can scatter. Okay, so there you saw some. Can you pick out where the peak is? I don't know. Do we need to change the channel constants a little bit? Yeah, so which one is the peak in? Is it more like 13 or is it more like 12? 15, 12.
Okay. Seems like it's never right in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll tell you how we get the actual number. But you basically want to look at it in terms of if it's in 12 or 13. Should really be in 13 for this. And actually 13.5. But, you know, one channel difference is pretty good. If it's down at like 9, 10, we really have problems then. So, and I'm just putting more particles through. Get that, and it's recording the data. So I will start over just to show you that we have data. So then it's going to continue this. I'm going to start everything from scratch and see if I can show you what I did. So hopefully, yes, let's see how this works. This is the sampler injector. So there's actually the you can't always see it. You see it. With an injector here. And you don't even see any particles in the bottom. A lot of times you don't. So one of the tricks is to use very, very few particles. The other thing we can do is clean it out. So best way is not to just put water in. So having an air supply and just shooting air in, get rid of our particles.
Very on the screen.
Very on the screen. I'm gonna be over here. Okay. Show the particles. I got. Here, I'll move it over this way a little bit. How's that? Yeah. Show my. There we go. Now I can see myself a lot better when we do this. So pop up any questions. I don't know if I can see the chat right now. So the first thing is we need some beads. I think I'll have gin. Oh, now we got the chat. So we can put them in a chat. There's a notebook. I have Jen take notes here so I don't have to. So these are 15 micron beads we want to know. And there's different lots of these. So this one's 14.4 microns plus or minus 0.8 microns. But in this traceable standard they have on here and catalog number 9015. So sometimes these change between each batch And oh, I forgot, we need to order up some more of these, Jen. But we should get another set of 15 and 30 microns. So here you go. Zoom in on the beads. If you look at the back of that, there's very little in here. I can't really see. The trick is that these are costly and you don't need very much of the beads. So the trick is to see how little you can actually put into a jar. And it's not an easy thing to pour or get. And it, inside of it, it is a little dryer pack, because when they're wet, ooh, all right. So there's way, way, way too much. So this is bad science, but we'll put them back. So if you can see a whole bunch of them, still too much, but I have a whole bunch in the bottom, you can see. So the smaller amount, the better. You don't want to saturate the instrument and give it too much. So here's the injector, and I got a whole bunch of particles in here. The other thing I have is I have a nice, handy air supply. There's many ways they do this. Sometimes you can press air cans. You can use any air source. But I like this setup where I can hook it up to a compressed air supply. I have a stop valve on it and a needle valve.
Do you have this in the field with you?
Yes. So we got the whole kit right here that has all this stuff. And it's actually all labeled here. So Jen did this. So if you want, and all the tools are labeled, so you put it back in the box. So we'll have all this stuff in the field.
We have a compressor.
The idea of a compressor is we can bring ours, but they have compressed air there.
So we do have compressors in our stuff.
And we do have compressors, but we usually use theirs, right? Because we're in a hangar that have compressed air supplies. But we do bring our own compressor and setup for this, but it's really not necessary for impact. So we can just use their shop air supply. There's nothing special. You don't need a cleaner. I have no filters or anything on this. So, but I bring this in, and the thing is, what I can do is I can regulate the flow of the air with the stop valve. I mean, with the stop valve turns it on, and then this will regulate it. And I like just it's kind of hard to know, but you only want about 5 or 10 liters per minute. And if you're really sensitive and you've done a lot of this work, you can kind of figure out. So that's about 10 liters per minute. So that's my calibrated standard, plus or minus factor 10. No, it's plus or minus probably about 5 liters per minute. So not very accurate when you put it on your hands, but you could put it on a flow meter and test it. The nice thing is then you can always keep this valve the same and don't change where you have the valve set. Because you don't want to run the air too fast, because then you'll put the particles through the laser beam too quickly. And I have this nice holder here on the airplane, the probe is on the aircraft, so you have to get a cart, bring it up there, and you don't have a nice rack to hold it. But we also have on here, then, I guess I gotta show you everything, which is the apparatus here for putting it in front of the laser beam. So the laser beam's just in front of where the air comes out, and this is what attaches to the injector. So the injector, these go together like this. You put the other one on here. And of course, when you do this, you want to make sure you have the laser so I can see the scatter light with my laser. And so you put the stepper on here and tighten it down. And then it puts it in front of where the depth of field is. And put on the injector.
It's a little fun. You get a call in my...
All right, stop it. Sorry. Sorry for the interruptions. Okay. We got the injector there. And then I just align this, and if you care, there's a, you can tighten this down so it's kind of airtight with the slage rock fitted on. All right, so we did this and got another section in here. So what we want to do is kind of note the approximate time for when we're doing this. And then approximately what the bead sides are. So when we're doing a field, if you want, you can just look at it, see that you're getting it in 12 and 13. You're probably good enough. Ideally, you would like to send it back and do all the processing we're going to do now. Okay, so I will try to do this. And so we got the time, and it's, let's see now. Now, let's see now. Okay, I gotta be over here. Who's that? And I'll try to bring you in a little bit closer so that we can see the probe and the screen. Oh boy, this is almost better than being in the lab here.
That's the name. Amber alert.
Everybody's phones are out. Okay, so you can see the screen. Don't have it. Perfect. There we go. So you probably can't see too much of it being in the video.
Some kind of background or something.
Oh, behind the, yeah, oh, this is, all I'm going to do is open the valve here. So you really don't have to see what I do because I have everything set up. And you don't have to spray it. I just have a stop valve.
Can they see how it's between the two?
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's go up here. Oops. And get you right in here. So let's see here. So you see the CDP. Give me a little view here, and I gotta turn it. So you can see the laser. I'm not sure how to do this. There you go. Now you're holding it. Crowd dropper pro is back here. The injector is here without valve. So they're all aligned, and the tube has a little bit of beads in there, actually quite a bit. Okay, how does that look? Everybody see that?
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay. Be famous here. I'm gonna never do this again. My one and only time to show the setup here. Okay, so I'm just gonna do this. You got the time, and let's see if we can see some particles. Maybe you can make this screen bigger. If you pull from the corner or make it, okay, you're going to make it nice and big. Yeah, that needs to put it on the screen. Okay, how's that? Now you can see the... hopefully, maybe that'll work.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
All right, let's see what I can get.
Okay, so I got lots and lots of particles, right? They go down. And what you don't want is them high concentrations of particles. So you see a little bit on there. And my trick is I tap on the bottle a little bit to shake some more particles loose. And you get another peak. And every one of them peaks is like a second of an interval. So here I can try to control by tapping on how much there are in here. But you kind of want these intervals when they're not too high, not too low. And I'm getting kind of a space in there with the...
One's the singles and one's the doubles.
Yes. So the channels don't have the same widths and they change. So I think we're getting to the ones that change to have a bigger width. Why don't you change it to, what do we got there? 100, why don't you change it to 500? You just type in that. So we're just gonna change the scale on the axis here because 300-400 is what you would get in cloud, so it's not that much. So there, but this is a little bit different peak, but a Nord peak in channel 15 through 17, but these ones are peaking a little bit higher than the other ones did. So you can kind of see where they are peaking, and we can then show you next week how to process this data and determine exactly where these peaks are. So you can repeat this same procedure then with different size beads by cleaning it out. So maybe we'll do that, take out 30 micron beads. All right, questions? Maybe I should show you how I'm tapping on it a little bit and stuff because the beads, you want to point it there? Maybe you can see I got a grass rod here. Everybody's assisting me. So the beads in here, and I just tap them loose a little bit to get more particles through. And it's kind of nice if I can look at the concentrations, but they just stick to the walls. These particles are somewhat sticky, and these are four Sirkin grass beads, dry. And so in the lecture, we had the refractive index for Sirkin. So, and you don't need very many particles, and I could do this for quite a while yet. So I can look at them on a screen if you want to go back to the screen. So I just tap a little bit harder, a little bit faster. And if you really wanted it good, you just need a second or two of this data. You don't need a whole lot of it like we're doing now. So, okay, so we'll record this data. All right, questions? Jenny, any comments about how much more difficult it is to do in the field than here?
I mean, it is more difficult because you don't have a nice setup like this.
Yeah.
But sometimes, as you said, it's okay to use the aerosol can as well.
Yeah. You got to be careful with cans sometimes because you don't want to generate droplets and stuff that are not. So I like this.
We used to do it with a shop vac and just blow through a sample line and take like a pencil and get some beads stuck to the pencil and stick it up on the screen.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of ways to do
many
this.
Different ways.
And people do it all. And then, you know, you can actually look at how fast these go through here. And so I could, you know, we could do a lot of different experiments, like change the flow on this.
you know, with a different one and have it set and show you what the difference is, because I've done this before. If you pass them in there too fast, like really, really fast, like supersonic speeds, you know, like the airplane would be flying, they will size differently. So I've noticed that if you pass them in there too quickly, they do that. And that was one of the things that hasn't really been resolved, is that the velocity of the particles. Too much. Other questions, comments?
Typically, this is a little easier to deal with two people, because you can have one person up in the plane telling you what they're seeing, because there's going to be one person who's actually running.
And when we did this, to do them two people, that's kind of the communication somewhat hard. Typically, cell phones or we had walkie talkies before, but that's like so much last century. I think just having cell phones if you need to, or
you just run to the one side of the plane, you say, I'm ready, and then you run back to the seat.
Yeah, I don't know if having other. So should we take 30 micron beads and all that good? We'll have to note. And now you can see that I was still getting beads out. But now you see there's nothing in the drop jar. So you don't need, if you see any white in that jar, you have enough beads. But if you don't see anything, that still means you should go back and clean it out, because you don't want to contaminate your 15 micron beads with the 30 micron beads. So hopefully if we put the 30 micron beads in there, we will scatter them at a... record them at a larger channel.
Yeah. That was 15 microns. 115 microns.
Okay, now we're going to do 30 microns. These are 32.5 plus or minus 1.2 microns. And these ones are dried lime glass poly beads. So one of the things is that these are actually they are actually different compounds. So they have a slightly different refractive index. So these are 30 micron dry sodium lime glass beads. And the refractive index is not written on here, but I have a documentation. Let's see if I can do this without putting in. So there, got just a little bit at the bottom. See if I can show everybody a little whiteness here. Right. Hard to focus in on my glass.
Put your hand behind it.
Put my hand behind it. Okay.
That's pretty good.
Right there, you see the white? It's just a little bit of. If you see anything that's white in there, you have more than enough beads. But don't waste our beads. Don't drop them. Now we have to make the note that we changed our size. Know that we're not doing 30 micron beads. Instead,
now, some time ago, those beads were like $60 a bottle. What are they up to now?
Oh, 400. So, yeah, you have to find out what the actual price now is. So, Jen's going to buy us some more. Okay, ready? Point it to my thing here. Okay. Point it on the screen. Okay, let's try this. Oh, there we go. The concentrations now are a lot lower on these ones. I think now you see there's almost like two peaks, but you see the other one, the big peak. Maybe you want to put it down to like 100 because we're not, with the bigger particles, it's hard to generate so many of them. So you see the one peak there. I think I still have contamination subtrace from the 15. Oh, there we got a big one. So where's that one peak there? That's
we have a peak in 18 to 20.
So we have to see where that's supposed to be. I can't remember that the 30 micron ones, but because it's not in the same size range. And then, of course, you're seeing the time series here. And we'll have to go through and pick out the times that we want to analyze and see what we get for the peaks. Maybe everybody can do a different one and see how it goes. So this is, you tap on them or you just shake them around or something like that. Because you can. And maybe the other thing is I could, sometimes you put a whole bunch of particles very quickly through that. So, but I kind of like a long peak because then you can get several seconds of low concentration, more like a cloud that you're going through. But you see it's quite broad in the sense that there's not just one size and they're not scattering all the same, so. Okay, questions? We should quit. Any questions? I hear nothing online. I only hear my air compressor running in the lab. Okay, well, why don't you stop the data file and we'll save that and I'll put that on there. And then next week we can.
Do you want to really quickly say, stop and you exit out of this? Would you like to make a quick statement?
Do not save? Yeah, don't ever save the tables in these when you stop it. So don't save the tables. And we'll have to get the data off. And we have to find on USB sticks.
I have them. They're mountless.
Okay. Jen's going to get the USB sticks. So with that, we'll pick up again on Tuesday. Okay.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
And I will stop the recording and end the session. How do I stop the recording?